This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
This is
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome. Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world.
Today, we'll talk about an amazing person who climbed to the top of his dreams. He was a boy who wanted to reach for the sky, and he actually did. Today, at Atenea Americana, a nice conversation with astronaut José Hernández, an engineer, a scientist, a startup entrepreneur, and even a politician.
We gotta engage all segments of society so that they also become successful, not only as custodians and as farm workers, but they're also successful as engineers, as astronauts, as scientists, as doctors, as lawyers.
Mr. Hernández was a kid migrant worker who worked hard to achieve his dreams with the support of his family, never accepting defeat and always giving his best. Stay with us. Here we are again in Atenea Americana, part of Stanford Hispanic Broadcasting. And I'm talking today with a very smart and interesting guest, and he is an astronaut. He is also the owner of a startup designing satellites. And he was also a part of the elections last year. His name is, of course, José Hernández. José, welcome, and I'm very happy to have you here again.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here again, this time in English, to talk to you and your listeners. So thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, so you have an amazing story. You came from a farmer's family, very hardworking family, and decided pretty young what was your dream, and your family support you, and you move forward with this that somehow, I suppose, for many people seem impossible dream, but you made it. Can you?
Well, yeah, first a clarification. I come from not a farmer family, but rather, because that would insinuate you owned a farm. We came from a farm working family, which means we worked on the farm. Big difference there.
Yeah.
And yes, absolutely. I we grew up as a typical migrant farm working family, and a lot of people always ask, what's a typical migrant farm working family like? You can imagine a family of four kids, my mom and my dad, getting in a car in the central Mexico, making a two-day trip to Southern California, working for 2 months there in the fields. We're in school, but Saturday and Sunday, we're right next to my parents working in the fields, moving to Central California for another 2 or 3 months, moving to Northern California for another 4 months, and then going back to Mexico and repeating that cycle year after year. That was our lifestyle. It's the only thing we knew. It was a tough lifestyle. It was a tough lifestyle, but that was the only thing we knew. And so we didn't know any better. So we thought that was how life was.
Wow. But then someday you saw people getting into the moon.
Yeah. What happened was I was 10 years old. And unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember the tail end of the Apollo program. And when I was 10 years old, I saw the very last man who's ever walked on the surface of the moon. We haven't had anyone go back up there since then. I was 10 years old, and it was none other than Gene Cernan who was walking on the surface of the moon, Apollo 17. And it was on TV. And if you could imagine this 10-year-old kid watching one of those vacuum tube TVs, those big TVs, black and white, with a rabbit ear antennas to improve reception because we didn't have any cable, and watching Gene Cernan walk on the surface of the moon. That's what inspired me to become an astronaut. I saw him and I said, wow, that's what I want to be.
Wow, so you decided, you made a map, you went to be an engineer, then to be a pilot. How was it?
As soon as I decided to become an astronaut, I shared my dream with my parents. And my dad, who only has a third grade education, sat me down in the kitchen table, same kitchen table where my mom makes us do our homework every day, used to make us do our homework every day. And he gave me a simple 5-ingredient recipe. He says, if you want to be an astronaut, you can do it, but you have to follow this recipe to the letter. He said, first, identify your goal. What does Jose want to be when he grows up? Second, recognize how far you are from that. Third, draw yourself a roadmap so it can serve as a guide to get you to that goal. Fourth, get yourself a good education. There's no substitute for education. Fifth and finally, he said, develop a good work ethic. Always give people more than what they expect of you. He says, you mix all that up. He says, that's the recipe for success. And I'm here to tell you it works. The only other ingredient I would add is a sixth ingredient, which is perseverance. Because you can't give up. And I'm living proof of the fact that if you don't give up, good things will come. Because NASA rejected me not once, not twice, not three times, but 11 times. And it wasn't until the 12th attempt that I finally got selected as an astronaut. So perseverance is a key element, key ingredient to that recipe for success.
Episode of Atenea Americana is part of Stanford Hispanic Broadcasting, and we record most of our shows from a non-profit public radio station. As part of our commitment to good causes, we want to give you some very interesting public service announcements.
Free Speech TV is an independent, publicly supported nonprofit TV platform that reaches 35 million households in the US. Using both television and the internet, Free Speech TV inspires viewers to become civically engaged in building a more just, equitable, and sustainable society. You can get involved by joining an online community, subscribing to the e-guide or RSS feed, sharing videos, of course, making a donation. For more information, visit freespeech.org.
And remember that today we are talking with astronaut Jose Hernandez, Californian engineer with Mexican roots, but also an entrepreneur, family man, and sometimes even a politician. So, you have a very unique perspective of things. I mean, you have been on space, you are an astronaut, you are an engineer, you have a very wide experience in engineering, in nuclear science, in satellite engineering, and now you even have a startup that has that designs satellites. But you also have the view of what is start from a very hard working life as a migrant worker with a family, with a very, very hard working family, and be on the other side of things, not just working today in a high-tech office. You know all the steps, and you have achieved a lot.
Absolutely. I have firsthand experience in that, having been a former migrant farm worker. I'm proud to say I'm a former migrant farm worker, and I understand the plight of the farm worker in terms of the vicious circle they can get themselves into, in terms of having to work in the fields to pay the rent, and then maybe not having time to dedicate to their kids to ensure they have access to a good education. And so there's a lot of issues, social, economic issues that affect the kids' ability to be able to be raised in a environment conducive to getting a good education. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very important that there's support structure for migrant farm working families that allows these kids to have access and opportunities to level the playing field a bit in having access to a good education. And so it's a big challenge for farm workers, and we have to keep fighting for their rights, especially when you talk about undocumented farm workers that have even less rights than a documented farm worker. And you know, this is why I believe it's very much needed that we have a comprehensive immigration reform act passed, because any country that deals with an issue of 11,000 undocumented people in their country mm-hmm. has to come to the realization that the system is broke.
Yeah.
And we need to do something to fix it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's establishing and passing a comprehensive immigration bill that would allow some of these individuals to come out of the shadow economy and come to the light of a real economy and be able to become even more productive citizens of this country.
Mm-hmm. And now all those kids, they are not a minority anymore, and these kids will handle the future. I mean, if we don't educate all these little kids that are growing up, that at least in California, they'll pretty soon be over 50% of the voting people. How are we going to manage to stay on the top of the tech and the innovation?
Exactly. When you start coming to grips with the fact that over 50% of the California population are going to have some Latino heritage in them, and the fact that California is the driving force for America's innovation, then you've got to say, look, we've got to provide opportunities to all segments of society. We got to engage all segments of society so that they also become successful, not only as custodians and as farm workers, but they're also successful as engineers, as astronauts, as scientists, as doctors, as lawyers. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to create, that type of environment. And you know, people have to come to grips with that everybody has to be given the same opportunity, else this country of ours is going to cease to be the innovative, the number one country in the world. Other countries are going to take us over.
Yeah. So you go around and you have explained your case to all these kids. Have you been talking around and tell kids you can do it?
Absolutely. I give a lot of talks to groups, to high school kids, to college kids. You know, in a couple of weeks I'll be in San Jose giving a talk at the SACNAS conference. Anyone who wants to hear me, I talk to them, and I give them, the most important thing I give them is my father's recipe, because it worked for me. And believe me, it'll work for anyone who's listening to this show if they apply it to the letter.
Yes. And how do you see California is coming through a very big drought? And you are from Modesto, and is an area which is driven by farming. And the drought is serious this year. And that, of course, has repercussion in, first we'll have in the farming industry, and then it will spread everywhere.
Yes. Well, we're definitely in a drought situation. For the past couple of years, we haven't had the rainfall we need. Without having that rainfall, what happens is it's a very complicated issue, water here in the valley, because we have the runoff from the mountains that goes into tributary rivers, and then this water, some of this water is being shipped to Southern California for farming and to Los Angeles for drinking water. And so the South is very thirsty for our water. And because we were in a drought situation, if we take too much water out of our rivers, then you got the salt water coming in from the ocean, creating salty marshes and interrupting the delicate ecosystem within our waterways, our delta waterways. So it's something, it has to do, really, it boils down to education, educating our citizens to conserve water, to maybe let their grass grow a little brown this year, because we don't have the water to keep it nice, green, and flush. And then turn off the water when, you know, they're brushing their teeth and when they're showering. Don't use as much water. Those type of things, common sense things, I think, will get us through this drought.
Yeah, and there are also, if it's not for food, there are other plants that we can use instead of grass, that they don't consume that much water and they don't dry that much and create a hazard.
Exactly.
Then, of course, the importance is that California is the number one producer of vegetables for the country. So if we don't produce enough vegetables, then the whole economy will go crazy.
Exactly. California is the food basket of the United States. And so we have to pay attention to that, because we're the major producer of food, vegetables and fruit at everybody's table across the, not only across our country, but we export a lot to other countries. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people depend on us. And so we got to be smart in how we use water here in both in Northern California and Southern California.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show, bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week, for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this. And remember that today we are talking with astronaut Jose Hernandez.
How was to actually realize your dream and go to space? How is the experience to be? You went to the ISS.
That's correct. I was the flight engineer for STS-128 mission aboard Space Shuttle Discovery. Flew a 14-day mission to the International Space Station. And basically was up there for 14 days, conducted a lot of science experiments. We had 3 spacewalks we had to conduct. We also did a crew exchange. We brought someone home who had been up on the International Space Station for 3 months. So we brought him home, and we left one of my colleagues, a female engineer, Nicole Stott. We left her up there for a 3-month assignment of her own.
Wow.
So we were very busy, conducted a lot of experiments, went around the world, believe it or not, once every 90 minutes, and traveled at a continuous speed of 17,500 miles an hour.
Wow.
And so that's one rotation every 90 minutes, and traveled a total of about 5.4 million miles throughout our journey.
I read somewhere that you were the first tweeter in Spanish from outer space.
That's correct. I was the first to do a bilingual tweet. I'm at astro_Jose. And so if you see my Twitter, you'll see that I usually send messages related to space. Sometimes I share my pictures from my mission. Sometimes what NASA's doing, I sent some links there. But it's an interesting Twitter account, because a lot of people use their Twitter to say, oh, I woke up and I had ham and eggs today. I don't do that. I sort of try to put important things that are useful, informative, especially if you're interested in space, you'll find it useful. So I encourage your listeners to follow me at astro_Jose, and
And you'll see that I do tweet things that will be of interest for those space enthusiasts.
We'll for sure do. What kind of message do you give to kids when you go around?
So do you actually go and stop at schools where there are some minorities, some Latinos, some other underserved communities, for one reason or another, and give these kids some inspiration and tell them how to realize their dreams?
Yeah, I go to all types of schools, including the ones that you said are underserved areas. And what I really just preach with them is I share my life story and I tell them, look, when all said and done, I'm no different than you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I came from a similar socioeconomic disadvantage that you guys have right now. But the solution is hard work and an education. Mm-hmm. You guys are willing to put those things together, and it'll work for you for whatever you decide to do in life. It's going to work for you. Mm-hmm. But there's no substitute. There's no shortcuts for an education. There's no shortcuts for hard work. You got to put your mind to it. Mm-hmm. And then I share that 5-ingredient, which is now a 6-ingredient recipe that my father gave me. And I share it with them. I said, put that to use. Mm-hmm. If you put that to use, I guarantee you, whatever goal you have in front of you, you'll set it.
You also have a book right now?
Absolutely. I have a book called Reaching for the Stars. Mm-hmm. Hachette Book Group, Center Street Books. It's available at Amazon.com or any Barnes & Noble, you can go and pick it up. I'm the author, so it's easy to look for it. And it's called Reaching for the Stars. I also wrote it in Spanish, and it's called El Cosechador de Estrellas. The same book, it's just translated in Spanish. And I just came out with a children's book.
It's called
The Boy Who Touched the Stars, El Niño que Tocó las Estrellas. And that's in Spanish right now. And right now I'm writing it in English.
Oh.
And you can see that, we have the book here, it's a very interesting book. It's my life story. It's uh-huh. right there. It's my life story, uh-huh. and I think you'll find it very interesting.
Yeah, well, and I'll get the kids one for my sons.
Yeah, right away. How old are your sons? Because it's
5 and 8.
Yeah, it's perfect for their age. Because when I wrote the first book, a lot of parents told me, I love your book. It's good for me. It's good for my teenage daughter. But, you know, I have an 8-year-old. I have a 9-year-old that also I also want to motivate. It says, why don't you write a children's book? And so now you can see this one.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You can see the boy who touched the stars.
Great.
And you can see it's basically, it's an illustrated book. You can see the illustrations.
Yes.
So
we'll have photos of that. We have photos of that in our website right now. So,
yes.
And the link to his books.
Yeah. So you should be able to see that one. But that one just came out. That's hot off the press. It's only in Spanish right now.
Great.
We'll get it written in English.
Great.
This episode of Atenea Americana is part of Stanford Hispanic Broadcasting. And we record most of our shows from a non-profit public radio station. As part of our commitment to good causes, we want to give you some very interesting public service announcements.
There are ton of social networking websites, but here is one that stands apart for a very special reason. This one has the potential to save lives. It's matchingdonors.com. Matchingdonors.com links organ donors with people in need of a transplant. In the US, 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most for kidneys. If you ever consider becoming a living organ donor, or if you are in need of an organ transplant, visit matchingdonors.com and give the gift of life.
remember that today we are talking with astronaut Jose Hernandez, Californian engineer with Mexican roots, but also an entrepreneur, family man, and sometimes even a politician. Last week, there was this celebration in San Francisco, and it was called Mexed I Am, and you were part of it. You were there.
Yes, I did. Yes, it was a multi-day event. I think it was organized by the Mexican consulate. Consulate Andres Romer was the one that put it together. Multi-day event designed to highlight the contributions of Latinos here in the U.S. And, of course, I was one of the speakers, and I gave my speech in terms of, you know, hard work and education. That's the key to success. If you're ever wondering what it takes, it's not a secret. It's just hard work and willing to get yourself a good education. And I was happy to be invited to speak there. I spoke to several hundred people out in the audience that came to the auditorium to listen to us speak, and it was a great experience.
While we're talking right now, while we're talking at this moment, there is also a humanitarian crisis going on that has a lot to do with the delay of, as you were talking before, a reform on immigration. And as you are also very involved in politics right now, and you really want to fight for the rights of all these kids and all the kids and migrant workers. Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, you're right. I'm involved in politics. I ran for Congress in 2012 here in the Congressional District 10. We didn't win, but we were able to put on the radar the issues of immigration reform, the issues of needing to invest more in STEM education. That's education that's focused in science, technology, engineering, and math. And so we were very, very successful in putting those type of issues on the table, where otherwise they probably wouldn't have even been discussed. So you know, someone has to be the voice for the kids that can't defend themselves right now, that aren't playing in a level playing field. Someone has to be there to say, let's create a level playing field for these kids so they have the same chance as any other kid in suburban America.
Are you going to be running again?
Well, I'm not running in 2014.
Okay.
But I haven't ruled out 2016 now. You know, congressional races are every 2 years. So I may run in 2016. We'll see where we're at with respect to that. But in the meantime, you know, I have a business. I'm running a consulting business in aerospace, and I'm able to work, you know, customers are everywhere from as far north as Alaska to as far south as Mexico. So I do a lot of traveling and everything in between. And so I keep myself pretty busy these days.
That's pretty much now to the point of the new face of NASA, because now NASA is partnering with private investors and is letting the private company to develop a lot of the things that the government was doing before.
Yeah, well, what you got to understand is that NASA has been working close to Earth, called low Earth orbit, for over 40 years. So NASA knows how to do that. It's not a big challenge anymore. So what they're saying is, we're going to divide space exploration into two areas. One that's near Earth, that's the International Space Station and orbiting around Earth. The other area is beyond low Earth orbit, going back to the moon, perhaps going to Mars or an asteroid. So NASA is going to focus on doing the hard part, which is that, because we haven't done it in a long time. We haven't been back to the moon since I was 10 years old. That's over 40 years old, 40 years ago. And we certainly haven't gone to Mars or an asteroid. So that's what NASA does best, is the hard stuff. The stuff that we've been doing for 40 years now, they're saying, hey, why don't we give private industry a chance? Let them develop that capability. And then we'll just contract with them to provide those services for us while we can focus on the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the strategy that NASA's doing.
That's great. And they do have a lot of exhibitions open for education, at least here in the Bay Area. You can see, you know, just in the Tech Museum, in the NASA Ames Museum, in the Science, in the California Academy of Science, and pretty much in every little Tech Museum, there is some little thing about NASA for the kids to play and see all the technology.
That's correct, and that's great because that's designed to stimulate the kids' curiosity on science, mm-hmm. on space, the physics of space. And it's designed to awaken them early, and they can start thinking about STEM, and hopefully when it comes to the decision of what career they want to be, well, we're hoping there's more engineers, because you know, our country needs more engineers. And hopefully some of those will become astronauts, because we need more astronauts.
But that wasn't there 40 years ago, so it was even more challenging and difficult.
Exactly. We didn't have that 40 years ago. We didn't have a Latino astronaut that we can identify ourselves with and say, hey, if he can do it, why can't I? But now we do. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping kids get even more motivated than how we got motivated 40 years ago.
Did you feel different, well, other than emotionally, after coming from space? Like, is it that difficult to adapt to almost zero gravity and then coming back for the muscles in the body?
First of all, it's difficult to adapt to zero G. So there's something that's called space adaptation sickness. It's kind of like being car sick. About 40% of our crewmates get that. But it's over in about a day or so. They get themselves acclimated. And then there's 1G adaptation sickness, which means once you're up in space and you come back to Earth, you also get sick a bit. And again, that's a one-day type of thing where you feel nauseated, but nothing major. Mm-hmm. I think the people that have a lot of problems are the people that stay 3 months or more up in space. Mm-hmm. Because even though they exercise, it's tough exercising in a zero-G environment because you're not using a lot of your muscles in zero-G. Mm-hmm. And so walking, simple exercises like walking back on Earth becomes a tough exercise because our muscles are not used to the weight anymore. So you suffer a little bit what's called muscular atrophy, weakening of the muscles for lack of use. Mm-hmm. So even when we're in space, we have a strong protocol where we do exercises, resistive bike, we got a treadmill, we've got resistive weights. But even though we do all that, people still feel pretty sick coming back home and they suffer. You got to go to physical therapy if you've been up there for months.
And what about the radiation? To going to the ISS, there is no radiation problem, isn't it, or there is some?
No, not very minimal radiation. If you do have a solar flare, eruptions in the sun, you know, there is chances of getting a little bit more radiation, but it's no more than being on an airplane. And the thing that helps you, because you're in low Earth orbit, what helps you is the magnetic poles. All the cosmic radiation sort of gets diverted into the poles, and so it frees you from getting bombarded from a lot of harmful type of radiation. Once you go to the moon and Mars, that's a different story. Now you got to figure out how to protect yourself, how to shield yourself from radiation.
And what kind of technology does your company specialize? What kind of things you do?
We specialize in satellite communication technology. We like to think of ourselves as a turnkey solution for any country or company that wants their own satellite for communication purposes. We can spec it out. We can figure out what their requirements, technical requirements are, transfer that into a design with a satellite manufacturer. We can get all the licensing with the ITU, International Telecommunication Union, and contract with the launch service provider, the rocket that's going to go up and take the satellite up. So we can put all that together, package it together for them in a turnkey solution system, and then they would have a nice communication, high bandwidth satellite for them to use and commercialize.
And do you make it right there in Modesto, or that's something
that needs to be done somewhere?
Party,
the companies that make it are the big companies like Boeing Aerospace Corporation, Orbital Sciences. Those are the big companies that make the satellites. We're sort of just like the technical liaison, like the project managers, if you will.
Oh, okay.
That we work with Boeing to make sure the customer needs are being met.
Thank you for listening to Atenea Americana, part of my effort with Stanford Hispanic Broadcasting. I am Isabel Juves, and I want to invite you to be part of this. Atenea Americana is a cultural bilingual show that brings you every week new interesting content, 1 hour in English and one in Spanish, always with a view of the cultural world involving Latinos, Hispanics, and sometimes other minorities, opening your horizons and breaking barriers in our multicultural world of the 21st century. You can hear in the intro and at the final of the show, as well as right now, music from the legend of Latin jazz, Oscar Hernandez. It all starts from the studios located in the heart of Stanford University, but expands to the world. We want to hear from you. We want you to be part of this with your comments, your ideas, and even more. You can do that at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. I really hope to see you there.
And today, there are some amazing things going, like that little cell phone that they sent last year, and it was able to stay in orbit for a day. They made it just to prove that that little thing could stay in orbit and send messages. So it can be as complex or as simple as someone needs.
Yeah, you can develop a $300-400 million satellite, very complex, mm-hmm. or you can design yourself a 10 by 10 by 10 centimeter set that would cost, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 to build. You put sensors on it, camera, and then pay another $80,000-$90,000 to send it up into space with companies like NanoRex. They'll send it up into space onto the space station. Astronauts will release it, and it'll orbit around the world for about a good 8-9 months before it comes back into the atmosphere. During those 8-9 months, students can activate it, and if they got cameras on it, they could actually see Earth from outside. So there's a lot of interesting projects being developed by university students. And as a matter of fact, I'm helping one at the in Puebla, Universidad Popular Autónoma del Estado de Puebla, UPAEP.
Wow.
They're embarking upon designing their own CubeSat, and we're going to launch it up into space, and the students are going to operate it from the ground and take pictures of Earth.
Great. And today you can make all sort of measurement that can also help with measure CO2 and the heat and all that stuff.
Sensors, you put infrared sensors, CO2 sensors, radiation sensors. You get very creative with a CubeSat, and that's the fun part. The students get to design it, and they decide what they want to measure, what they want to monitor for those 8-9 months, and then they design it, and we'll help them get it off the ground.
And how crowded is it right now up there with all the satellites? Some people say it's too much. Some people say, no, it's not.
A lot of people think, you know, space is very crowded, but space is very big. And so, depending what type of satellite you have, it could be as close to Earth as 200 to 300 miles to 2,000 to 3,000 miles. So mm-hmm. between 200 and 2,000 to 3,000, that's a lot of space.
Yeah.
And all around the world, you know, that's a lot of space. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of stuff up there. Mm-hmm. We monitor orbital debris as big as about 2 or 3 inches. We're able to monitor and see where it's at so it doesn't hit the space station or satellites. But other than that, I think it's a little exaggerated that there's a lot of stuff. But we still should be careful and not pollute our
our space too much.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And remember that today we are talking with astronaut Jose Hernandez, Californian engineer with Mexican roots, but also an entrepreneur, family man, and sometimes even a politician.
We are really grateful to have you here, and we wish you all luck. And hope to keep in touch with you.
We will, and hope to see or see your listeners on Twitter, and hopefully they'll follow us so we can keep them abreast of what we're doing.
Definitely. Bye.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Muchas gracias.
And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana. Stanford, 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe. This is
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture, on the air and online.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU, Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
Remember to come back soon.
Ciao.
See you later.